This is Backseat Box Office, episode number 338, for the weekend of January 18th through January 21. Hey, this is Jeff.
And this is Art.
And we are the Backseat Producers, and you are listening to Backseat Box Office. This little show, little-ish show, about movies, TV, and other stuff. And so there's going to be a lot of talking about me and my buddy Art. Say hello, Art.
Hello.
So how's things going over there? Anything worth reporting?
No. Weather continues to be nice for Texas. It was in the 60s today. And so, yeah, I mean, that's... Can't complain. There's no downside to nice weather in winter.
Yeah. Yeah, we've been, here in the West Coast, we've been getting hit by rain. A lot of rain, which I hear we need. So, all right. So, the first segment of our show is we talk about the box office from the box office last weekend, like how the movies did last weekend. So, let me tell you about the top five movies at the box office. At number one... For the weekend of January 11th through January 13th, here's your top five. At number one, we have new release The Upside, $20.4 million. At number two, in its fourth week of release, we have Aquaman, $17.4 million. Number three, we have new release A Dog's Way Home, $11.3 million. Number four, we have Spider-Man : Into the Spider-Verse, $9 million, and that's in its fifth week release. And at number five, we have Escape Room, which escapes with $8.9 million, and that's in its second week release. So there you have it, folks, your top five.
Yeah, interesting. Upside took the number one spot with a paltry $20 million. So yeah, that's surprising. I don't know.
All right, so we had an interesting chart last week with underwater movies.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at The Upside. According to Box Office Mojo, it is the 17th overall French remake movie.
Oh, interesting.
Okay, so it number 17, but some of the movies at the top of this remake French list. Is pretty interesting. Did you like to hazard a guess at number one?
I couldn't even guess.
Okay, let me take that back. Any French remake movie other than The Upside.
Okay, it's
on here.
Was La Femme Nikita originally a French movie? Is that on the list? Or
hold on, scrolling. I don't see it on the list.
Okay, I feel like I probably know some of these movies, but that's just not the way my brain works.
okay. All right. So let me, I'm not going to go the top 10 because some of them are obscure to us.
They're probably super obscure. Yeah.
Okay. Number one, 3 Men and a Baby.
Really?
$167 million.
No idea that was a French movie.
In its opening weekend, it made $10 million and opened in 1,006 theaters. And that's November 25th, 1987. True Lies, number two. The Birdcage, three. Let me see. 9 Months is five. 12 Monkeys is eight.
Wow.
12 Monkeys came out December 29th, 1995. Made $184,776 on three screens. Do you remember The Toy? Richard Pryor and Jackie Gleason.
Wow! Yeah, I saw that in theaters.
And then we have The Upside at number 17. Number 18, My Father the Hero, and probably as we go down, not a whole lot. But my favorite movie, I think, on this list, or maybe one of them, The Man with One Red Shoe. July 19th, 1985, starring Tom Hanks and Dabney Coleman, $8.6 million total. It made $3 million in its opening weekend. It was on 1,000 theaters.
Wow.
So, yeah, there's a remake French.
Wow, I had no idea.
Top 39. So, if you're interested in seeing the full list, you can just if you click on the upside under genre, it says remake from.
What year was the toy? Was that 80, 81?
82.
82.
Came out
okay.
December 10th, 1982. All right, so that's going to do it for our sideways look at last week's box office. So now, let's move on to the next segment where we talk about new movies. And actually, I should amend that to new movie, because we have one movie that we're going to talk about, and Art will do that thusly.
Okay, so the one movie we are going to talk about is Glass. It is currently 35% rotten on the tomato meter, 58 fresh reviews, 107 rotten, 165 total reviews counted. 96% want to see it, though, out of 2,107 user ratings. From Unbreakable, Bruce Willis returns as David Dunn, as does Samuel L. Jackson as Elijah Price. Known also by his pseudonym, Mr. Glass, joining from Split are James McAvoy reprising his role as Kevin Wendell Crumb and the multiple identities who reside within, and Anya Taylor-Joy as Casey Cook, the only captive to survive the encounter with the Beast. Following the conclusion of Split, Glass finds Dunn pursuing Crumb's superhuman figure of the Beast in a series of escalating encounters while the shadowy presence of Price emerges as an orchestrator who holds secrets critical to both men. Rated PG-13 for violence, including some bloody images, thematic elements, and language. Genre, drama, mystery, and suspense. Directed by M. Night Shyamalan. Written by M. Night Shyamalan. Runtime, 110 minutes. We have everybody we've named: Bruce Willis, James McAvoy, Samuel L. Jackson, Sarah Paulson, and we also... Charlene Woodward. That's everybody I recognize. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I don't know. It's the critics are not loving it. We'll have to see where it goes. I still haven't seen Split. I heard good things about Split.
I'm in the same predicament. I think I didn't see Unbreakable when it first came out. Or even close to when it came out. I think I ended up watching it a couple years ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I watched it in theaters, and then at one point I owned it on DVD. So I've seen it a few times. I really enjoyed it. I like the whole comic book theming stuff. Mm-hmm.
It's almost like a secret comic book movie.
It is, yeah. You don't realize it's a comic book movie until you actually watch it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. I'm interested, but I'm probably not going to go out of my way to see this anytime soon.
Same here. I probably watch it when it hits the vaunted Netflix or some other, or get it at the library.
When they come out with a three movie DVD set.
Yeah, at Walmart for $11.99. Yeah. Okay. So usually at this point we talk about critics, like blurred from different critics. But I think I'm going to try to filter out all of the Glass pun-related blurbs, which might not leave me too much. Because if you just go on the jokes pertaining to the half-full, half-empty thing, I'm just looking at the top eight, and that gets rid of two of them.
Yeah, I see that.
Let's start with Manola Dargis from the New York Times. Shyamalan's talent for primitive scares remains intact in Glass, as does his love for cramming a whole lot of story in one feature. And adjacent to that, we have Kerry Langle from the Arizona Public. A little West Coast opinion here. The sequel to Unbreakable and Split adds another layer to the Glass onion of self-conscious genre riffing. Oh, 3.5 out of 5 stars. And so if we go to the other side of the fence... let's do Daily Mail, Brian Viner. Aptly enough, the deficiencies of Glass are entirely transparent. A terrific cast, let down by a director whose primary motivation seems to be to entertain himself, not his audience. And that's a 2 out of 5. Any other ones you like?
No, nothing really catches my eye. It'll be interesting to see how this goes once the audience people start seeing it.
Well, I was going to say a fresh review from Thelma Adams for the AARP Movies for Grownups, who's almost in my demographic. But she has a half empty or half full thing, we're going to bypass that. Yeah, pretty much. So, as usual, people that are going to go see this movie, we're not going to convince you. So, feel free to send a voicemail and let us know what you thought. So, speaking of voicemail, let's go to our third segment, and that's Share Time, where we talk about what we've been up to since the last time we recorded. But just before we do that, we play any voicemails. So if anyone would honor the show by sending us a voicemail, what you've been up to, that would be great, but just not this week. So we're hopeful that that will change next time. So with that, Art, what have you been up to?
All right, so I finished up Agretzko. I also watched the holiday special that just released this for this past Christmas, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. I actually got the skinny from Richard. He and Connie watched it and enjoyed it based off hearing me talk about it, and they both enjoyed it. They were maybe 5 or 6 episodes in the last time I heard from him. So it's something we'll be able to talk about next time we meet up to play games. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. It ended on, there was a little bit of a cliffhanger, and there was a little blurb that, season two coming sometime this year. So we'll see when that drops. But it was very enjoyable. It's very cute. It's funny. It's entertaining. I like the characters. So yeah, you can't. I mean, if you work a corporate job, not necessarily even in Japan, you'll still, I think, will sympathize with the characters and see where they're coming from. I started watching another anime. This one is called High Score Girl. High Score Girl is a. It's just a straight up slice of life kind of anime, still set in Japan. It's set in the 90s though, and it has this kid who is obsessed with video games of all type, console games, arcade games, handheld games, whatever he can get his hands on. He's a total slacker, but he meets this girl and she's way better at games than he is. But she's also a good student and she's very quiet, and it's all about their kind of relationship and how it goes. It's just completely a relationship over the top kind of drama comedy slice of life TV show. I actually went through the entire first season, and that's all there is on Netflix. So now I'm gonna have to go see if it's something I can track down, like if it's on Crunchyroll or if it's online or if it's just this is something that's been created for Netflix and there's only one season of it. I don't think that's the case. It doesn't look like it. It looks like something that they've imported. So there's got to be more of it somewhere, because I'm gonna go totally nuts if I can't follow up on this. I did not go out and see any movies this past week. So yeah, here's the thing: we do 2 weeks in a row, and I got a lot less to talk about. I think that's it. I binged through that one whole show. Oh, I watched a comedy special. It was at the top of the advertising page on Netflix, and I am not remembering the name of it right off the top of my head. But I will open up Netflix right now and tell you. There it is. Sebastian Maniscalco, Stay Hungry.
Yeah, I know you're talking about. Go ahead.
Okay.
Funny guy,
So
funny guy.
he's a very funny guy. I've been very entertained by it. I really enjoyed watching it. A lot of his comedy really hits home as a father, as an Italian. Being as I was married to an Italian, I saw a lot of those tropes. So yeah, very funny, very entertaining, and worth watching. But I don't think I've watched. I can't recall any comedy specials on Netflix that I watched that I didn't really care for. So they got a pretty good lineup. They're always a good go-to there. I'm thinking about checking out the Ballad of Buster Scruggs. I just listened to the backseat producers talking about the episode. It has me semi-interested. But it is Coen Brothers, and Coen Brothers generally not really my thing. So I'm kind of torn. You know, they made it sound really, really good, but they all generally like the Coen Brothers, and I don't. So, it's little short vignettes, so I could chew it up in little pieces, or I could always just decide, I watched the first vignette, I'm really not into it, and I can always just walk away. So we'll see. I'll follow up on that later. But that is it for my share time, sir.
Okay, so I watched one, I believe, Oscar-winning movie.
Okay.
But first I want to talk about that my daughter and I are still trucking through her first watch and my rewatch of Game of Thrones. We had tonight, we were supposed to finish season 4, but she had some school stuff she had to do, so we ended up not watching anymore. I know, a good story. There was a death. There were actually two deaths. I thought one would hit a lot harder than the other one, and I was totally wrong. The first one she didn't really care too much about. The second one, totally ripped her heart out, type thing.
Mm.
So it's always interesting to see, you know, what things resonate with her. And I keep going through the histories and lore, and it's just the, you know, some of these actors, I mean, they do a good job on the show, but these little audio, not really commentaries, but these little audio like podcasts of certain historical events, I mean, it's really adding a lot of value for me, and I'm starting to, you know, really get more of a sense of what's going on in the show. We're done with the first 4 seasons, and we have 5, 6, and 7. And this week they just announced that season 8 is going to be April 14th. So there's a bunch of us at my work. We don't know what we're going to do after Game of Thrones. Maybe we'll have to watch Firefly again. I don't know. Also had a conversation with a friend of mine. He thinks there isn't any way that he's not going to be disappointed with this. With the you know, final season, because who knows what they're going to do. But, you know, that's why you still have to watch. Regardless of how good or bad it is, we'll still watch it. Okay, so that's Game of Thrones. I've also been watching this little sitcom that comes out on after Modern Family, Single Parents. It is super quirky. I mean, quirky for network television, but it's got a good cast, and it consistently makes me laugh with the things that happen between, you know, between the different parents. And it's really about the friendships that all these single parents, they kind of need each other. But, you know, they're all crazy, pretty much. All right. So the movie that I watched, I finally got around to seeing The Shape of Water. Now, this was one that was recorded, you know, for the free HBO weekend. And, you know, even though I haven't seen all his movies, I am a fan of Mr. Del Toro. So I gave The Shape of Water. I enjoyed it. I wasn't totally over the moon, because I still am bringing some baggage from Creature of the Black Lagoon. I kept waiting for him to grab somebody and take them to the depths. But nothing like that happened during the movie. I was told that it was a musical, which is true, I guess. I don't know how many musicals have one musical number in the movie, but it totally makes sense within the framework and context of the story. But there are a lot of good performances, and I got to scroll down because I don't remember the lady's name. Sally Hawkins did a fantastic job as a mute person, but still kind of conveying emotion. Richard Jenkins plays the roommate, and he's such an interesting actor. Even though I think I remember that he played the dad in Say It Ain't So, which was kind of a ripoff of Something About Mary. So in that movie, he played someone that just had a tracheotomy. So he had that little device that you put up to your neck to talk.
Right.
But it was all profanity during the entire movie.
Yeah.
And it was oddly, I would say it was amusing at the time. I don't know if I should really admit that. But no, it was I enjoyed him. And then Michael Shannon, scary as always. Has he been in a movie where he's a good guy? I don't know. I'll have to see. But they a very good job. Kind of, it felt like an homage to Splash, but it's kind of updated a little bit, I think. But I enjoyed the movie. I recommend it for people. Octavia Spencer was also very good in it. You know, it was R because there are some sex scenes in it. One kind of felt out of place, but I don't know. I guess they were showing the kind of establishing the home life of Michael Shannon's character to make him kind of have maybe some sympathy for him, but you know, what are you gonna do? All right. So Shape of Water recommended, and this is not news. I'm looking at Tomato Meter. It's still 92%, 391 reviews, 359 fresh. So yeah. So anyways. So that is my share time, and that's gonna close the book. Oh, I almost forgot. Spider-Man Far From Home trailer.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see that?
Yeah, I did see that.
Oh my God, the dickwad line at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm digging the new Flash, not the Joe Manganiello Flash. I'm digging the, I don't know, the nerdy or the, you know, the rich douchebag.
Right.
Anyway.
Yeah.
All right. So now we can end share time, and now we can get over to news. So Art, what do you have to tell our lovely audience?
Okay. So this really caught my eye. Kevin Hart to lead the Monopoly movie. Comedian Kevin Hart is in final negotiations to star in the film adaptation of Hasbro's popular board game Monopoly, which is in the works at Lionsgate. So it's an adventure-filled adaptation of the property. It's been long in the works, with Ridley Scott was attached at one time to direct. When Lionsgate picked up back in 2015.
Who is on crack? Go ahead. Just keep going.
Right. Yeah, no. They hired Gattaca filmmaker Andrew Niccol to pen the screenplay, which follows a boy from Baltic Avenue who uses both chance and community in a quest to make his fortune. Whether that's the version they're sticking with now that Hart's on board, is unclear. This is not going to be good. This is going to be so bad. They had this little piece of information in there. The game itself has been played by more than a billion people in 114 countries, and it's been translated into 47 different languages. Hart will soon begin shooting the third Jumanji film ahead of release later this year. So there you go, Monopoly the movie coming to theaters.
All right, hold on. What was that number again?
A billion people, 114 countries, 47 different languages.
Okay, so you said a billion, right?
A billion.
So the game came out in 1935.
1935.
Which would make it 84?
Yes.
Or no, 83, because February, it's going to turn 84. So that's 83 years to get to a billion. I guess that's kind of impressive.
Yeah. Lots of everybody, you know, you always know somebody who's played it. You can't throw a stick without hitting somebody who's played Monopoly.
Right.
The problem is you can't throw a stick without hitting somebody who's played Monopoly wrong.
Yes. There's also, how many editions of Monopoly?
No, so many.
There's
thousands.
Have you heard about Monopoly Cash Grab?
No.
By the way, okay, this is thanks to the Twitter account at Tabletop Gaming Deals, which I'm just going to say about 3% of my income goes to all the things that he finds.
Right.
So Monopoly Cash Grab is you get a cash gun that shoots cash out and you try to catch it. So it's a dexterity game. So apparently the same people that are greenlighting the games are greenlighting the movies too. All right.
Yeah. No answer. Did I tell you about playing Monopoly Cheaters Edition with the in-laws?
I think you did, but why don't you regale us again?
Oh, it was just Monopoly Cheaters Edition, where you're allowed to cheat during the game. You're actually encouraged to cheat. It actually went quite well. It's a Monopoly. It's got these specific cheater rules in it. So you're only allowed to cheat in very specific ways, and you're trying not to get caught. And everybody's trying to watch you because everybody knows what the specific cheat rules currently are. You know, it's like Switch a property with somebody else's property, or grab a property from on the board, or take some extra money. So it's very specific things. Then you get a reward if you successfully pull off the cheat without getting caught, kind of a thing. It was actually quite fun. I would totally play it again.
Did Steve
Brittany,
Jackson make this?
I don't know. I don't know who made it. I
Just
didn't.
for the cheat, just for the cheating and
Yeah.
encourage cheating in Michigan. But go ahead.
Right. No, I gotcha. Brittany was actually very good at it because nobody would ever suspect her because she's so nice. So yeah. So Monopoly, the movie, coming to theaters with Kevin Hart. We'll have to see how this ends up.
All right, so my first news story is actually a couple of mini or a couple of blurbs about a couple of movies that are going to be in production. Art, you were telling us about Dune, that they have cast Dave Bautista in Dune. Apparently, he's going to be playing the Beast, Rabin or Raban. It says here Dave Bautista, who played Marvel's Drax in Guardians of the Galaxy and had a small role in Blade Runner 2049, has also joined Dune as the Beast Raban in a casting decision which suggests the character will have a higher profile than he did in David Lynch's film. In other casting news, we probably covered that Timothée Chalamet, the actor from or Chalamet from Call Me by Your Name or Late and Lady Bird, is going to be playing Paul Atreides, and Rebecca Ferguson of Mission Impossible franchise will be playing the mother. They've also decided who's going to be heading House Harkonnen. Stellan Skarsgård, who co-starred
Interesting.
in Marvel's Thor movies, has been cast as the blister-plagued villain Baron Harkonnen. And it says here, hope he likes hours in the makeup chair. In addition to that news, there's also news about Jumanji 3. It looks like that they are going to have Awkwafina and Danny DeVito. It says here, we should note that nothing has yet been revealed about their characters, including whether they are avatars, NPCs, or real-world players. Jumanji 3 comes as Awkwafina prepares to film two sequels to last year's Crazy Rich Asians. And then Danny DeVito would likewise be coming off his co-starring role in Disney's live-action remake of Dumbo, which comes out on March 29th. All right, so we got next.
Okay. Disney, Warner's, and Universal fight over Bad Robot. All three are reportedly battling it out to get J.J. Abrams' Bad Robot production company to move to them. Word broke in November that Abrams had ambitious plans for a major deal to encompass everything from films, including a set number per year, and TV series to digital content, music, games, consumer products, and theme park opportunities. His business is currently split between Paramount Pictures and Warner Brothers Television, but the new one would see it all consolidated under one company. Now, the competition to get him is heating up, with Disney and Warner said to currently be the favorites, though Universal is trying hard and Apple is also rumored to be in the mix. We'll see what happens if we get any more news on where Bad Robot's going to end up. Bad Robot, known for such things as Alias and just, all the things J.J. Abrams is working on putting out. Yeah, I've always been a fan of Bad Robot Productions, and we'll see where they go from here.
Yeah, and technically, I think Bad Robot's connected with Star Wars since he's doing
Yeah.
episode 9.
Right.
Okay, so and since I brought up Star Wars, we'll go from one Disney thing to another. Disney plans live action Hunchback musical.
Click.
Yeah, you can't hear, you can't hear the heartache. Okay, so we had just another thing that Disney feels it has to remake. De David Henry Hwang. Matt, it says M. Butterfly has been hired to pen the live-action musical Hunchback for Disney Pictures. The film will be an adaptation of the original novel by Victor Hugo and pull elements from Disney's 1996 animated The Hunchback of Notre Dame movie. Oscar winners Alan Menken and Stephen Schwartz will write the music for the film, with Josh Gad producing and rumored to be starring as the Hunchback. This joins a list of various Disney animated features that are being adapted into live-action projects, including Aladdin, Dumbo, Mulan, The Lion King, The Little Mermaid, and Lady and the Tramp.
It's just they're gonna remake everything live action. Ta-da!
Yeah, won't that be great? All right, Art, what do you got next?
I know, you're so thrilled. All right. Okay, let's go over here. All right, we've got a first photo of Vin Diesel in Bloodshot. So we talked about Bloodshot before. Vin Diesel himself released his first photo from the upcoming Bloodshot comics adaptation via Instagram. The story follows a mortally wounded soldier resurrected with cutting-edge nanotechnology and tasked with rounding up super-powered outcasts called Harbingers with the help of his ability to interface directly with technology. We have Toby Kebbell, Sam Houzon, Isa Gonzalez, Tallulah Riley, Alex Hernandez, and Guy Pearce to co-star. The plan is for this to serve as the start of a 5-film shared universe based on the Valiant comic books. Fast and Furious franchise producer Neil Moritz is producing alongside Dinesh Sham Dasani, while Eric Heiser, Arrival and Extinction, penned the script. The biggest piece of information in there, 5-film shared universe based on Valiant comic books. So I want to go look at Valiant comic books and see which other comic books they are bringing to the screen. We've got things like Exo Manowar, Ninjak. I'm trying to think what else. Turok Dinosaur Hunter. Valiant was pretty big in the 90s when Bloodshot kind of first came along. And I wonder what the other 4 properties they're planning on bringing in for this shared universe.
Interesting. Okay. Because I had no idea that Valiant Comics was a thing. So good on that. All right, we have a TV story. Steve Carell returns to TV with Netflix's Space Force. So yes, another thing that's coming out on Netflix. So we have Steve Carell is returning to television for the upcoming Netflix series Space Force, the workplace comedy. A reunion of Carell and the Office creator Greg Daniels has been given a straight to series order and follows a group of people who must develop a 6th branch of the military. A space force, following Trump's expressed desire for one. Carell and Daniels co-created the series together and will executive produce alongside Howard Klein. No episode count has been currently set for Space Force, but scripts will begin development shortly.
So they call that what? A 6th?
Military. 6th branch of the military.
Branch of the military. So Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines...
Coast Guard,
not the National Guard?
Or not, I don't know.
That's what I'm wondering about. Army Reserve? Well, that's part of the Army. It's got to be Coast Guard or National Guard. I would think it would be National Guard, but I don't know. Maybe it's the Coast Guard. Or maybe somebody miscounted it. It's supposed to be 7.
Okay, according to Wikipedia, Army, Navy, Marines, Air Force, Coast Guard.
Okay, so what is the National Guard? As reserves.
And then there's another one that says the 7 uniform services are in order of precedence. Army, Marine Corps, Navy, Air Force, Coast Guard, Public Health Service Commission Corps, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration Commission Officer Corps. Whoa. Here, let's go defense.gov. What do they got? Defense.gov. Let's go straight to the source. None of these
we're getting on Wikipedia-ers.
Army, Marines, Navy, Air Force, Coast Guard, National Guard.
There you go.
So there's 6.
I think there's 6 on the end. Space Force should be 7. okay.
So anyways. All right.
In
so
that's, other news.
Yeah.
Dragon Prince. Netflix has confirmed the second season of its animated series, The Dragon Prince. It's coming to the streamer on February 15th. No word on episode count, but the first season was 9 episodes, with the second likely to be the same. Set in the magical land of Zadia, 3 kids from opposite sides of a major conflict discover a secret that could change everything and decide to join forces to go on an epic journey. The trek could be their only hope of ending the war and restoring peace to both worlds. So I watched all of Dragon Prince. I binged it relatively quickly, and I'm excited to see where it goes. It is, once again, it's from the creators of Avatar, or it's got people who worked on both. I don't know how deeply connected they are, but it's sort of a spiritual successor to the Avatar franchise. So yeah, I'm excited for that. You got anything else?
Yeah, it's funny. I bookmarked a page 36 Netflix Hidden Gems You Need to Watch in 2019, and it starts with like sex education, Roma, and as you go down, we got the Good Place, Maniac, Lilyhammer, number 12, High Score Girl. It just says
Nice.
Japanese TV show based on manga.
Yeah,
That's all. That's all it says.
it's on the list. It's really got me wrapped into it, and I cannot explain why.
Yeah. All right. All right.
Send me that link.
I
I'm
get
looking
I
at.
what?
I was saying, send me that link. I'm looking for something to watch.
Okay. All right. Okay. My second to last news story will be from thewrap.com, top 10 box office predictions for 2019.
Oh, hit me.
So, all right. So number 10. So keep this in mind for the contest. If it may or may not happen. Okay. At number 10, Spider-Man. Number 10. Number 9, Captain Marvel. Number 8, Jumanji 3.
Really?
Which will, well, it, Jumanji, Ju, just say Jumanji, just say Jumanji 3.
Yes,
Oh,
it's
yeah,
free.
cause, yeah, right, because it's, yeah, gotcha, because Welcome to the Jungle was number 2. Okay, that's what's okay. It made 962 million.
Oh,
So get
okay. But
ready.
over Captain Marvel? Okay, continue.
It might be the difference between a March release and a December release. I don't know.
Oh, okay,
It
all right.
it'll be interesting because they Jumanji's going up against Episode 9. Yeah, it says the film made 962 million, so get ready for a plot loophole and a third jungle adventure. There's little reason to doubt that Jumanji 3 will perform well again against Star Wars. Question is whether the incredible chemistry between the stars will be enough to push its prequel even further and give Sony its second billion-dollar hit in the studio industry. Speaking of billion, I think Aquaman, when you count worldwide, is over a billion.
Oh yeah, not surprising. It's closing on 300 million just for domestic.
Number 7, The Secret Life of Pets 2. Illumination might not have Pixar's pedigree, but is now a box office force beyond just the Minions. The first Secret Life of Pets was one of the top 10 films of 2016, and it made 875 million.
Okay, yeah.
Number 6, Hobbs and Shaw. This is Fast and Furious, or
Spin-off.
the full name of the film is Fast and Furious Presents Hobbs and Shaw. Right, what is that? At number 5, they're saying Episode 9. This will be the most scrutinized release of the year. After Solo became one of the biggest disappointments of 2018, there will be many eyes in the final chapter of the Rey slash Finn Star Wars trilogy and how it performs compared to the polarizing Last Jedi. Popularity of both the old and new characters should push Episode 9 back to 1 billion, but films like Jumanji 3 show other studios aren't afraid of Star Wars anymore, and the standard of success for the godfather of movie franchises is higher than any other. At number 4, we have Toy Story 4. And it's been 9 years since Toy Story 3 grossed $1 billion and earned a Best Picture nomination. But much like Incredibles 2 last year, Buzz and Woody's fourth adventure should score a huge opening weekend. But word of mouth will determine how the film performs going into a July with Far From Home and Lion King. November 22nd, Frozen 2.
Really?
6 years after its release, Frozen has become the Disney classic for Gen Z. In much the same way that the Disney Renaissance and Pixar formed the childhood memories of countless Gen Xers with millennials. Released ahead of Thanksgiving weekend, the sequel should hit theaters with overwhelming hype and a chance to pass the original's $1.27 billion global total. And number 2, Lion King, nostalgia for Beauty and the Beast pushed its the 2017 remake to $1.26 billion worldwide. Lion King arguably has an even bigger nostalgia factor, and this remake has Beyonce and Childish Gambino in it, also known as Donald Glover. With no major family film competition in mid-July to the or from mid-July to the end of the summer, this film is going to make incredible amounts of money. And at number 1, we have Avengers Endgame. Is there any real doubt Marvel has left its fans babbling about the snap since Infinity War came out last April, and every single one of them will be back in theaters to see how Captain Marvel and the remaining Avengers warp time and space, mainly time, to undo Thanos' genocide. The question isn't whether Endgame will be the top box office hit of 2019, but whether it will beat the $2.04 billion global total made by Infinity War, or its record 257.4 domestic opening. So there's your top 10.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Some of it I agree with, some of it I don't. Definitely agree with Avengers Endgame in the top spot. Yeah, for sure. No doubt. It'll be interesting to see how they unravel everything. Do you know who originally defeats Thanos, gets the gauntlet, and undoes everything?
Adam Warlock.
No.
No?
No. Character you like a lot.
Cap?
Nope.
Spider-Man?
A woman.
A woman?
A woman.
Nebula?
Nebula.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was Nebula in the comics. Who was able to finally, so that's why every time she keeps sticking around, it keeps surprising me. I'm like, are they going to go there?
All right. Well, since I was not going to talk about this, but since you brought it up.
Okay.
Avengers reshoots boast an unexpected return. Several members of the cast of Avengers Endgame have returned for some brief reshoots ahead of the fourth Avengers film release in late April. Actress Karen Gillan, who happens to play Nebula, and Zoe Saldana, Gamora, posted tweets and photos, videos of themselves getting into makeup for reshoots. This has raised the obvious question as to Gamora's involvement, considering her death in Avengers Infinity War. Spoiler. Set photos have teased that flashbacks and her time travel comes into play in the new film in some capacity. Oh, you think? So the return of some slain characters, or I don't know, everybody, in the narrative world would be not unexpected. The reveal also comes after the release of the first trailer for Spider-Man: Far From Home, who this week, with that film story, said to take place in a post-Endgame world. One right. Where at least three previously disintegrated individuals are seemingly back in action.
Yep.
Avengers: Endgame is set to hit theaters on April 26th. And there's a tweet by Karen Gillan, washing the blue from under my fingernails one more time.
There you go. Interesting, interesting. All right, my next story. I found, based on the tomato meter rating and the critics and whatnot, I find this a lofty goal. Glass aims for $65 to $70 million opening weekend. What do you think? What do you think you gonna take the over under on? What do you think the over or the under on that? You think they're gonna make that $65 million? You think they're gonna come up short?
I feel like it's gonna come up short.
I tend to agree 100%.
But not by much. I mean, it is the only release.
It is the only release. There, it does have that going for it. Yeah.
Or so. Only wide release.
Right.
I mean, but, is Dragon Ball going to take some of that demo?
They are similar demographics. They are. Yeah. I mean, but not to say that Upside was going to be hugely popular, but Upside was kind of all by its lonesome. With not a lot else going on, and it only pulled 20 million. So this is a longer weekend, so it'd be counting a 4-day, and we're only going to report on three.
Yeah,
so,
true.
But this 65, 70 million is counting the 4-day box office, just for clarity's sake. So we'll see. Unsurprisingly, M. Night Shyamalan's Thriller Glass will dominate the domestic box office over Martin Luther King Jr. holiday weekend. Despite very average reviews for the combined Unbreakable and Split sequel, Glass is expected to make between $60 and $75 million during its first 4 days of release. That's pretty great for a film that cost a mere $20 million to produce, which Shyamalan self-financed and thus will get most of the profits himself. So I hope it does well, just so that he can, you know, make his money back. So we'll see. Let's see. Glass is the only wide opener this weekend. It's the only real competition. It is the second week of the Upside, which is expected to score another $15 million over the 4 days. And no real major newcomers until Lego Movie 2, the second part, on February 8th. February 8th, that is just around the corner.
Yeah.
I can't wait. That'll be the next big thing we go to see. That is my last story. So.
Okay. And so I am pandering to my co-host here. So here we go. From Not Cracked, but The Onion. Fox News debuts premium channel for 24-hour coverage of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Nice.
As part of its effort to provide the most comprehensive reporting possible on the freshman congresswoman, Fox News announced that Wednesday the debut of a new premium television channel that will offer continuous around-the-clock updates on Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez for an extra $8.99 per month. You'll have an all-access pass to the AOC Zone, which features wall-to-wall coverage of every word Ocasio-Cortez utters, as well as in-depth analysis of her wardrobe and any videos we're able to dig up from her college days, says Fox Sports person Avery Madison, adding that the new channel will include uninterrupted live footage of the 29-year-old representative every time she appears in public. Thank you for that pop-up, Onion. Along with nonstop commentary from a 12-person panel of experts. We know our viewers will come to depend on this outlet for 24-hour coverage of AOC, which is why her tweets, Instagram posts, and her latest wacky policy proposals will appear in a ticker at the bottom of the screen. We're particularly excited for the premiere of the channel's flagship program, AOC Tonight with Tucker Carlson. Minutes after AOC Zone began broadcasting, sources confirmed its rating had already surpassed those of Fox News.
Nice. So sign me up.
I thought you'd enjoy that.
I totally appreciate that.
All right, no problem. And with that, unless you have anything else to add, that's going to be it for this episode of Backseat Box Office. Our website is backseatproducers.com, where you can find the voicemail number, which I would read if I didn't just close the tab. You can find our voicemail number. You can find back episodes of Backseat Producers, and all kinds of other fun stuff. So with that, let's end the show by saying thank you for listening. And to everyone listening out there, take care of yourselves, and we hope you come back for the next episode. Art, what do you have to say?
Goodbye, everybody. Go watch a movie. Call us up and tell us about it.